Well, thank you very much, Brian, and welcome to everyone. And I'm not sure about this spot right after lunch, but let's see what we can do here. Most of the talks are here are related to more to fertilizer, as the overall title would indicate. And so I guess I'm supposed to cover everything on manure here in 25, 30 minutes. So we'll see what I can do. Let's see, just a little overview of what I plan to do. First is just looking at the first thing to do if we're looking at, going to manage manure well is to determine the nutrient content of the manure. And then we're going to look at the nitrogen, manure and nitrogen, and particularly the ammonia emissions aspect, which is a major loss. Then some of the application methods that can be used to conserve ammonia. Some examination of nitrate leaching and other end losses. A little summary of some phosphorus work, and then finally with a matching up manure and crop nutrient need. So the goal in this overall really is to minimize the manure nutrient losses and maximize crop utilization. And actually in the title referring to nutrient use efficiency, I don't really mean a specific quantitative measure, but more just how can we increase the efficient use of nutrients in manure. In terms of determining the nutrient content, most states that have any significant livestock operations have some kind of guidelines or book values that are used for estimating manure nutrient content. A couple of examples that I'll refer to are ones from Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. And one that's really often cited is the Midwest Plan Service document. And what we'll do is take a quick look at comparing that to some long-term lab summaries. This is an example of what the results of this is a 10-year study from Wisconsin from several thousand samples and four different laboratories, just looking at average values of various animal species and categories within the swine one, as you see. In this case, it's liquid manure, but the same thing for solid and so on. So these types of things are fairly widely used. And what we have here is actually the bars represent the first three are laboratory summary averages from Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Vermont. Then we have book values from Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, and then the last one is the Midwest Plan Services. And just for to not belabor it too much, I just wanted to look at the Midwest Plan Services one compared to these others. And if you look at nitrogen, their values for the MWPS are higher than most of them by quite a bit, and except for Pennsylvania. They're higher than all the others in the P205, and then they're equal or lower in K2O. And I guess the main point here is just that there is a fair amount of variability. While these guidelines, they can serve as somewhat of a guideline, they aren't something you can really rely on. The other thing is that those are averages over an extended period of time. Those values aren't necessarily static, as you can see in this. These are some 15-year trends from phosphorus content in dairy manure from Vermont samples, and there's about a 30% decrease over that time period. And the same thing was apparent in Wisconsin, but the good thing about that data is they had TMR, or a total mixed ration, values from that part of that same period, and you saw a trend downward in what's being fed to the animals, which gives pretty good evidence that that's why the manure values are down, is that there's less, basically, I think, less excess of phosphorus supplementation of the diets over time. So again, that's, if we're looking, trying to get some kind of numbers, you probably don't want to look at a whole long-term average because it may have changed recently. And then the last point here in terms of these values is the variability. These summaries are based on manure from various farms over time. And this is just looking at the Vermont summary. If we have we had a mean value of 24 pounds per thousand gallons here, but quite a range. About two-thirds of the samples were within 8 pounds either way. A similar thing occurred in phosphorus. But what that really says is if you use that mean value, but your values, you're really up on one end or the other, you can be really off by 30, 40, 50% in terms of your nutrient management planning. So what that really says is that sampling and analysis of the manure is really critical as a starting point for doing an efficient job of using those manure nutrients. Well, I'd like to shift then talking about manure nitrogen. And starting by just what the, looking at the main manure nitrogen pathways, we can think of the two pools, the complex organic nitrogen, and in particular the urea or ammonium fraction, which the goal really being to maximize the amount of the manure nitrogen that goes into the plant. However, as we know, there are other pathways that that nitrogen can take, leaching and runoff, some denitrification, and in particular with much manure management, the ammonia losses. And that's what we'll focus on here in the next section. Why is there a concern about ammonia losses from manure? Well, part of it is just an economic thing of loss of nitrogen for the crop. It also reduces the nitrogen to phosphorus ratio, which if you've got nitrogen-based application, it means it takes more manure, and therefore there's more buildup in the soil of phosphorus. If you've got a phosphorus-based application, it means buying more fertilizer nitrogen to supplement. There's also environmental issues, both eutrophication and air quality, that are part of the picture. So really, I think the key to making more efficient use of the nutrients in manure is really conserving nitrogen. To manage the nitrogen better, we have to have some kind of an idea of how, a better idea of how the, what the time frame is of ammonia loss. And this is just an example for some data on dairy sarai on corn silage stubble with the ammonia emission rate here in hours after spreading. And you can see that the highest rate of ammonia loss is in the first several hours, and then it slows down over time. This is really pretty typical of most research on dairy and swine manure, where there's a rapid loss initially, a large amount in the first 4 to 6 or so hours, and then continued low losses after that, and really emphasize the importance of the early action to control it, like incorporation. Poultry litter is a somewhat different story because there's more gradual loss of a drier material, but it's mostly within the first week. There are a number of factors that go into this ammonia loss situation, characteristics of the manure, the weather conditions, soil properties, and so on. But really the one that we actually can do the most about in terms of management is really application methods, incorporation, and so on. And that's what we'll look at now. Tillage to control ammonia loss is probably the most common thing, but of course timing is critical because of that that rapid loss early on. Here we have some results of work done in Maryland looking at dairy slurry with different methods of incorporation. This is done right after application. And you can see that the ammonia lost dropped from close to 50% if it was left on the surface down to 10% or less with various tillage methods. Some difference depending on what degree of mixing or coverage there was, but certainly a dramatic reduction in loss of ammonia. And what about yield? Since that's part of the theme here, is to look at use of these nitrogens of these manure nitrogen or nutrients for crop production. This is an example of a 3-year study on with manure and nitrogen fertilizer for corn. And what the situation here was that basic different fertilizer rates were applied either where there was no manure applied or where there was a early spring application of manure that was incorporated within the day. So what we see is where there was no manure applied, there's quite a substantial nitrogen response up to the 112 kilogram per hectare rate. On the other hand, where the where there was manure applied, essentially it was flat, no significant effect at all in terms of yield. The manure was supplying all the nitrogen that crop needed. Looking at fertilizer nitrogen equivalents, it was about a 39% on average. It ranged from 27 to 44 over the course of these 3 years, but the manure total nitrogen was approximately 40% or so equivalent to fertilizer. And this actually is fairly similar to what has been found in a whole range of other studies, an average for dairy manure of 37%. Swine and poultry are substantially higher, I think probably because of the higher ammonium and or available nitrogen in those from the manure from those species. I would like to point out the PSNT, the pre-siderous nitrate test we used in this particular study, and the 3-year average for this was without any manure, it was a 9 milligrams per kilogram test with manure, it was 25 milligrams per kilogram. The 9 is quite low and would recommend about this 112 kilogram or 100 pound per acre rate, whereas the with the manure, that's above the threshold and would say no need for nitrogen, additional fertilizer nitrogen. So as a former extension agronomist colleague of mine in Vermont said, that PSNT is really the best, it's an ultimate manure test, because it really was telling it at the point that the crop needed it what was the nitrogen availability. And it fit quite well in this case. So aside from tillage, there are a number of different direct incorporation methods that can be used. This is a sweep injection right here. But basically, these are methods that by direct incorporating it, they assure immediate incorporation to conserve ammonia. And there also are options that will maintain residue in no-till or reduced tillage situations. And here are just a scattering of various equipment out there. There's these S-tine narrow shank injectors, a sweep injector. Some of them actually are, this is not an injector, but it's actually the manure in these two here. The manure is just laid right on the ground and immediately covered, either with disc covering discs or with S-tines. But these are all methods that do accomplish this immediate incorporation in one operation with the spreading. I want to talk just a little bit about a recently completed study in Wisconsin looking at comparing a couple of these injection methods or with surface application on the no-till silage corn. So this is a kind of a narrow shank injector, and then this is actually this aerator or airway tool, and it's actually a splash plate broadcasting the manure and then following with the aerator tool to do some sort of partial incorporation. This is different from some that we'll look at later here. A summary slide on the losses. This is 4 years, a total of losses in 4 years. And by the way, there's a session on Wednesday on novel manure application techniques for perennial forages and no-till. And this Mark Paul will be talking up more in detail on this one, as well as on a couple of the other ones I'll be referring to. In any case, if we look at those three methods, no incorporation, partial incorporation with the aerator, and injection, first of all, the white is the ammonia emission. So there was a decrease in ammonia emission with more incorporation, with the lowest in the injection. There also was a decrease in the total nitrogen loss that was measured. But if we look at the nitrate leaching portion of it, here are the numbers in terms of percentages, you can see that with that partial incorporation, the leaching actually did go up. So there was somewhat of a trade-off. They did, generally, these methods did reduce ammonia and overall nitrogen loss, but there was a fair amount of variation by year, both in the total amounts and in the relative proportions of those two, depending on conditions. But there are some trade-offs, perhaps. In this case, there really weren't any yield differences. Perhaps because the manure was at a rate that didn't supply a large enough proportion of the need. But just trying to look a little bit broader at effects of manure injection, for the most part, the research has shown that there are yield increases because you're conserving nitrogen, more nitrogen available, and unless you're way over with your applications, you would get an increase. There also, in some cases, there's been an indication of increased denitrification, especially with a knife injection. This has been somewhat improved by using a horizontal type of injector where you're, instead of having the manure concentrated in a narrow band, it was more spread out. And there have been some cases of increased leaching. On the leaching story, I'd like to just move on to a broader picture of the role of leaching and manure. And as a general rule, I think looking at a number of different research studies, when the manure is applied at agronomic rates, the nitrate leaching has been roughly comparable to that from fertilizer nitrogen. This is just an example from Jemison and Fox in Pennsylvania, looking at 4 years of a study of dairy slurry for corn, and really some small differences, but nothing really significant over the year, essentially equivalent losses of nitrate. However, in these and other studies, if there's higher rates of manure or nitrogen fertilizer or a combination, there generally is higher leaching. So it means you've got to adjust your rate to what the agronomic need is. A couple of other aspects of management are illustrated in this data from work that Harold Van Ness and his group at, in New York have done, looking at, in this case, there were two sites located near each other, one of loamy sand, one of clay loam. There were two crops, maize, corn, and grass on each one, and different times of manure application. And looking at both of the soils, the timing was a very big factor, about twice as much nitrate leaching from the fall applications as spring. More time for things to happen when there's no crop growing. And as we might expect, there's more leaching in the loamy sand than there is in the clay loam. And also much more leaching in the corn than in the very little leaching underneath the grass. Some indication, however, of a little more loss from fertilizer than manure. Other nitrogen losses, particularly denitrification, just to say a little bit about that. In general, looking at kind of an overview of these, for the most part, from the point of view of the crop need for nitrogen, it's not generally been most of the, I mean, there can be a loss of nitrogen in terms of the crop, but probably the bigger issue, as been mentioned earlier today, is the N2O as a greenhouse gas and the environmental aspect. Most research has shown relatively small losses, but there have been a few that have shown substantial losses under certain conditions. And when there have been comparisons with manure and fertilizer, generally the manure has shown somewhat higher denitrification, presumed because, well, three of the things that are needed really for this to take place are a continuous source of nitrate, and which manure will tend to supply, the available carbon as an energy source for the microbes, and water to create anaerobic conditions. And these are all probably somewhat promoted by the manure as opposed to fertilizer. So there are some considerations, but this will depend an awful lot on what the conditions are. A couple of other options for getting the manure on, perhaps more efficiently or with better management. This is something that's been termed, these are both out of work from Ontario by Bonnie Balcoyo. What's referred to as zone injection, or combining a zone till or strip till with manure injection, a way of trying to maintain residue without and still have manure injection. And then side dressing manure, either by an injection or an S-tine cultivator. Another window of time to apply manure. It might tend to be drier conditions. Very good nitrogen availability shown, at least in these studies here. And it allows use of the PSNT, the pre-sliders nitrate test, to probably try to gear the rate of manure. So there are some other options that may work in some situations. Well, I'd like to just shift to some discussion of grass or perennial forages. What can we do about these? We don't have the option really of tillage, unless we're done with the stand. And that's why broadcast surface application is the dominant way that manure is applied onto perennial forages. It's fast and relatively inexpensive, but there also are large ammonia end losses, which is an economic loss for the crop, and results often in inconsistent crop response. There can be damage to the sward and contamination of the forage, poor uniformity of the spread, and it's subject to runoff losses. So with all those things, are there some alternatives out there? Well, there are. Some of them aren't so common, but this is what is referred to as a drop hose, or a surface, one type of surface band. This was taken in Sweden, and this basically is just there's just a distributor that transports the manure to all these however many hoses, and you can see that you could cover a pretty wide area, but it actually is putting the manure in bands and uniformly distributing it through that distributor. A variation on this, and this has got several different names, sliding shoe, trailing foot, drag shoe, sleigh foot. The bottom line is that some of them have an actual shoe that it looks like it might be an injector, but it basically is sliding along the surface of the ground, placing the manure right next to the ground, below the any kind of canopy that's for the grass or the forage. So it is placed in bands. There are a couple different variations on this type of equipment. Both of these are certainly a lot more common in Europe than they are here. The same thing is true for injection. It's possible to inject on grassland as well. And these are a couple of types. But because you have, this is fairly shallow injection, maybe 5 centimeters deep, you need to have them closely spaced in order to get any significant amount of flow out of them. But they are out there. This one was even taken not too far from where I am, and this is in Minnesota. Just most of the work on this type of equipment and this kind of work, most of this work has been done in Europe. And I just tried to review a number of articles, give sort of a rough idea of what they have seen in terms of ammonia loss reductions relative to surface application of manure. And that what generally the surface application has resulted in, say, 40 to 75% of the applied ammonia in the manure. But if we look at reductions in that, the surface band, say 20 to 60%, sliding shoe, trailing foot, 40 to 75%, shallow injection, 60 to 95%, and there's even more variation than this. But you can see that there's a substantial reduction in ammonia loss with these methods. There also is quite a high variability, and there actually has been a couple of studies looking at the surface band that said there really wasn't much of a difference from surface broadcast application, primarily because you had this early effect in reduction of ammonia, but that it faded out and you actually had a longer effect of the others. In terms of yields, generally these have, the surface band and sliding shoe have resulted in higher yields because of more efficient use of the manure nitrogen. But the injection has been kind of bad, increased, decreased, depending on the situation. Essentially, the injection process does do some damage, and it's a matter of whether that is compensated more by the more efficient use of the manure nitrogen or not. I'll just show an example from some work that we did in Vermont, and this is looking at a kind of a simpler version of that trailing foot type of application. But here you can see where it's been applied. There's about a week's regrowth of grass here, but you can hardly see the manure. This is just one of those six trials here. This is ammonia loss as a percent of the applied rate of ammonia N and hours after spreading. And the broadcast, this is the application, the ammonia loss over time. And here's the banded. So there was, you know, in this case, about a 50% drop. Most of that happened right in the first several hours, and then it stayed more or less the same. And in this study, there were increased grass yields in 2 out of 4 site years. We're moving to British Columbia here, and Shabtai Bittman who's in the audience here, if you have any questions. he's certainly done the most work in this kind of area in North America, and so I'm going to show a little bit of these results. There's a lot of data here, but basically, this is looking at this drag shoe or trailing foot type of application versus broadcast on tall fescue. And this is 3 years three years of work, average results. And if you look at this upper line in all these cases, this is fertilizer nitrogen applied right after application, after harvest, I mean. And if you just look at these, the dark triangles, that's this drag shoe application right after harvest. And if you look at it, you see that basically they're right on, in most cases, they're right on the same line as the fertilizer nitrogen based on the ammonia N content of the manure. A little bit lower in this case. But what it's really showing is that with this method, you can get quite efficient use of that manure so that it approaches or even is comparable to that from fertilizer. And then the next step that Shabtai developed here is what was referred to in various ways, but it's really this tie aeration system with banded manure or assisted infiltration. And the sort of the formal name, since this is an airway product, is subsurface deposition. And this is basically using the airway makes these 15 centimeter deep or so intermittent slices into the ground, and then right following behind each one of them is a band of manure. So there has been some work done with broadcasting manure after this aerator, but that is not near as effective as having it lined up right after it. So just sort of trying to summarize some of the results, ammonia loss about a 50% reduction compared to broadcast, runoff is reduced and the nutrients in it, odor reduced, some perhaps increase in ammonia emission compared to the broadcast or a control. Yields no effect of the aerated alone, but the tine aeration was greater than surface band, is greater than broadcast in terms of overall grass yields. Okay, I have a couple, just a little bit of review of some phosphorus availability, phosphorus issues. In general, phosphorus availability for manures is equal or slightly less than fertilizer for most of the work that's been done. A number of factors that are affecting that, including reaction of phosphorus with various manure constituents and so on, and the manure soluble P content. Recommendations for manure phosphorus vary quite a bit from, say, 60 to 100% fertilizer P equivalent. And this may have something to do with sort of short versus long-term interpretation, but there is some evidence of even higher phosphorus availability with manure in some cases, probably it being protected by some of the organic material from insolubility. In terms of runoff, there's been a fair amount of work done with manure and phosphorus runoff. I won't get into very much of this, but basically, first of all, manure does have some positive long-term effects in terms of soil loss, reducing erosion, and other soil quality parameters. While you're putting manure on the surface, you're adding a lot of phosphorus, so it does increase the dissolved phosphorus. And with the total phosphorus, it depends on that mulching effect of the manure versus the additional phosphorus, and also any interaction with tillage. Incorporating the manure with tillage or other systems will reduce generally the dissolved phosphorus and sometimes the total phosphorus, but it depends on if that tillage increases the sediment loss, the erosion loss. So it's a little bit variable. And as far as comparing the phosphorus source, there have been a number of studies have shown somewhat different things. Swine and poultry manure generally was shown to be about equal to fertilizer, dairy manure less than or equal to fertilizer P in terms of runoff. And this probably the water extractable P is a very major factor in this type of thing. Leaching, a couple of different studies looking at comparison of manure and fertilizer showing either in some cases greater movement on the soil profile with manure, in other cases much less from chicken manure in this case. And that other, the last study that I spoke about with Harold Van Ness. Hey, Harold. Good timing here. Anyway, this showed that as opposed to the nitrate leaching, on the phosphorus leaching was greater on the clay loam soil than the loamy sand, because primarily with macropore flow, fall application was greater than spring, and timing of the precipitation relative to manure application was a very important thing. I'd like to just wrap up with a couple of slides here on looking at the overall nutrient balance in a corn dairy manure system. And what this is really saying, if we're going to balance manure or estimate our rate based on the nitrogen, to meet the nitrogen needs of the crop, and what I've got here is nitrogen and phosphorus. The crop need is in blue. This is assuming you have about 100 pounds, well, say 100 pound need after you've got other credits, and a relatively high P and K soil test, so you're just looking at a maintenance level of P and K. Well, what you have then is you're meeting the nitrogen need, but somewhat, this is if it's with quick incorporation of the manure, so you're conserving manure. We have some difference, some excess phosphorus. However, if we have, a 7-day manure incorporation, we have a much lower ratio of nitrogen to phosphorus, and so what we have an even nitrogen and way excessive phosphorus levels going on. On the other hand, if we're looking at a phosphorus-based application, we have, again, the phosphorus is meeting, the need is being met with the manure, and we have somewhat deficiency. We need to supply some additional fertilizer to meet the nitrogen need. On the other hand, with a non-incorporated situation, phosphorus need being met and a big deficiency that has to be met by fertilizer. So that really does kind of show the big picture in terms of nutrient balance in these different situations. So in summary, basically, poor manure management has a lot of problems, create a lot of problems. Improved management really refers to quick manure incorporation, optimum rate, good timing, and so on. And there are a lot of options out there for doing a better job and therefore matching better the crop need and the manure nutrient availability. Thank you.
phosphorus in these manured systems where you see phosphorus mobility increase? In other words, do you come up to a soil test P concentration, and then above that point in time, is there greater P mobility within a soil profile?
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure I can really answer that, but there's a, but, oh, sorry, yeah. Yeah, basically you're asking if you have a more phosphorus saturated soil. I think the answer is that yes, there is, but I really don't, I can't speak authoritatively about that. In other words, if you've already basically have very high soil test, then you're not going to be absorbing, have much capacity to absorb anymore. Is that, yeah. I actually can't speak to any specific data on that, though. Any other questions? Yes?
Has there been a growth of any kind of industry which is using manure and processing it? So, because it seems to me the biggest problem is that producing a lot of this manure in places where it can't be used, all of it can't be used. So has there been a growth of an industry in the fertilizer industry or elsewhere to utilize that, maybe so it's more convenient to use?
Well, I think that the answer is yes. I mean, there's certainly various treatment facilities, types of treatments that are done on the farm. In fact, you know, it's just separation and anaerobic digestion and so on. There's also, I visited a couple of years ago, a chicken poultry manure pelleting operation that was putting them into pellets to be used as fertilizer. So there certainly are things going on that way.
All right. Thank you. Let's give them another hand.